Ladies and gents, welcome back to another Engineers podcast. We're stateside today. I'm joined by Soren Larsen, who's founder of a company called Crosshatch, who are doing some really interesting stuff and build a platform that helps create identity layers for hyper-personalization. And it's easy, seamless, and safe to use for data sharing. We've got some really interesting things that we're going to be talking about today. Soren's particularly excited to talk about the death of the cookie, and we're really going to be talking about the rise in data portability. There's some subsections in there as well. Hyper-personalization and what is hyper-personalization, and the future of this industry is really where we're going to be focusing. Soren, thanks for coming to join us.
It's awesome to be here, Elliot. I've loved your writing on LinkedIn. It's so cool to have this conversation.
Pleasure. Absolute pleasure. For everyone listening, give us a bit of an intro into your background and where your career has been over the last 5 years.
Totally.
That'll set the scene.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate it. So in my background is in pure and applied math, worked in New York Tech for a decade. Last 5 years, worked at places like Walmart and OpenStore. OpenStore is an e-commerce Shopify aggregator. At Walmart, I had a very interesting insight. Our work at Walmart was very interesting. We worked for Mark Lurie's team. Mark Lurie sold Jet.com to Walmart. And as a part of his new position, he established a startup organization responsible for sort of doing new things, for example, like delivering groceries into people's refrigerators and even automatically replenishing groceries without people having to do anything. And I worked on that team using all available orders data that Walmart had for grocery. I observed every single order that came through. And one thing we observed was sort of crazy is that even with Walmart's incredible data resources, we weren't readily able to predict what people wanted next. And so zooming out, you know, we're in this incredible age of AI. Like our expectations, I think collectively, are that a Jarvis is going to pop out of every surface. But our observation is that if even Walmart doesn't have like a rich enough sense of like who somebody is, what they need right now, how's anybody else with their first party data going to do it? And so CrossEdge exists to try to bridge this gap of, on one hand, we would love for a more personalized internet that can anticipate our needs, make life easier, more effortless, more interesting. At the same time, like the available mechanisms, the available data resources to do it just don't exist. So CrossEdge aims to solve this through an identity layer where consumers can log in with their data and to unlock experiences that are tailored to them specifically.
Can we go into that a little bit more detail and just break that down and what users would be likely to expect from CrossHatch?
Totally. So a lot of you can think of CrossHatch a lot like Plaid. So Plaid is auth for finance apps. You can think of CrossHatch as auth for personalization and maybe even specifically personalized AI. So like Plaid, with three lines of code, developers, marketers, businesses can add the CrossHatch link to their site. And through that, they can configure the link, just like in Plaid, to invite users to connect various data sources, like their email, or their credit card spending, or their Instagram, or their Pinterest. And using this data, businesses can specialize this data and perform inference over this data to specialize experiences like providing hyper-personalized search or recommendations or even dynamic UI that wherein when a user arrives at a business's site, the site can update itself according to who somebody is. And so we're hopeful that in this future, consumers actually don't need to do that much saying about what they need, because actually through CrossHatch, a business can already know. And I can imagine some folks saying, like, Soren, like, you know, we're moving into an era of privacy. Why would you want to tell people more about yourself? That seems crazy. And I guess our, just maybe attempting to preempt it, our note is that our feeling is that the world is talking about privacy so much because the internet has become creepy. I know folks will insist, you know, I mean, indeed, like there continues to be this conversation of, well, like I know Instagram says that they're not listening to like my conversations, but like, I mean, I don't know, but like you, we hear our parents say these things. Like, I mean, I don't know either way, but the internet has, it feels a little creepy. And so maybe a natural response is, oh, well, we want more privacy, but we also give up privacy for like, for more convenient experiences. For example, many of us use Google Maps and Waze. Google Maps has a live stream of every, you know, everywhere we go. And so like, it seems to us that the way forward is actually just to create a more controllable way to unlock more convenience. I'll pause.
Every time I talk to you, I'm fascinated even more by Crosshatch. The Walmart story as an example makes a lot of sense around you in the trenches really building something that I can relate and understand to. So the hatch of Crosshatch makes a lot of sense, right? A lot of companies say they're doing personalization, but I think Crosshatch and the offering that you guys have got is pretty nailed on. What do you think hyper-personalization is? Touched on elements of it, but what do you think hyper-personalization is?
Yeah, I appreciate this question. So I think maybe we can answer by like what it's not at the very least. So like for the last decade, it seems, we've all agreed that personalization, not hyper-personalization, is like the application of often machine learning models over your first party data and sometimes third party data that you've sourced from brokers or something. And your first party data is comprised of clicks, like things that people have clicked on your site, like their scrolling behavior, and maybe the occasional purchase. What's worth noting is in the Walmart case, like Walmart is a consumer staples business. People are shopping all the time. Most businesses are consumer discretionary businesses, where consumers are maybe making a few purchases a year. And so when we zoom out and think about like, well, what data does somebody have to perform, you know, some kind of personalization, whether we call it hyper or whatever, most of these businesses just have information on what a consumer has clicked and scrolled on their site. And the trajectory of personalization today is you can personalize experiences just on the basis of what people click and scroll and sometimes buy. And our sense is, indeed, machine learning is incredibly powerful, and you can get very far. You can get there. Like, people continue to show incredible results by shipping experiences that are basically based on the idea of people like you like, where people like you is given by people who've clicked the same and scrolled the same. But our sense is hyper personalization is not that. Like, the way that I've clicked and scrolled and maybe bought some things that one time doesn't say who I am. It doesn't say what I need. And no machine learning model will magically resolve this. And I think the easiest way to see this is to like take all the data that you have on a given customer, so their clicks and scrolls, and put it into a language model and ask it, like, based on what this person did, who do you think they are? Like, it might be a little interesting, but it doesn't speak to me specifically. And so we say that hyper-personalization comes from a consumer presenting themselves, allowing a business to know its customer in a safe way, wherein the business can reference much richer data based on their activities as recorded everywhere across the internet. So hyper-personalization is just a more intimate and hopefully safe form of personalization.
Yeah, I think actually the different, how you've explained personalization, difference between the two, hyper-personalization, I think is a really, really good example of why they're different, what a typical consumer like me, as an example, on Instagram would be doing is probably not a very, very good representation of what I might want or how I might want it or what I might buy. Okay. It's a pretty good point. I do really want to go back to some of our privacy conversations and the rise in data portability. And for anyone listening, Soren is great at blogging, posting about this stuff, and keeping everyone up to date on recent news. or in recent weeks he is. So connect with him. His LinkedIn's below, just to follow what's happening in this space, and it should be a talked about space. So can you share with us the rise in data portability and what's going on?
Yeah, it's fascinating. So data portability is on the rise today because of the law, changes in the law. Indeed, many folks in Web3 have been very interested in data portability, but a challenge is, well, many of the sources that you would like to be portable have so far not been portable. Many folks would like to pull out their Instagram data and make that portable, but it's just not. You could attempt to, it's just hard to get it. And so what's crazy happening this year is that the EU has passed a law called the Digital Markets Act. And it's beginning enforcement next month. Literally in March. In addition, European companies have actually been have engaged legal activity against, I believe, Google and probably others for failing to live up to data portability clauses, I think as given by GDPR as well. For example, an Italian court just ruled in favor of an Italian startup who wished to enable users to make their data portable. Either way, if you search for Google Data Portability API, you will find documentation where Google is making available to third parties, as authorized by you, all of the following Google data. It's crazy. Your Google Maps data, that is your searches, your directions, your Chrome search history, your YouTube viewing history. It's incredibly expressive. The only way to get this data, for example, from Google so far was to go to I believe it was takeout.google.com, where you had to go through a process and click a bunch of buttons, request your data, and you could download it. But the form it was in was very complicated. There wasn't very rich JSON. And for the average consumer, it's unclear my data is now portable, but what do I do with it? And so Google shipping this data portability API, and it's our expectation that other big tech are going to have to follow as a result of this EU law. Soon there will be API access enabling consumers to direct third parties on their behalf to siphon this data and use it for new purposes. I think the last thing I'll say, the reason why I think we should be so excited about this is so far, when we use a service, we are basically endowing that service exclusive rights to use data that's accumulated through the usage of that service, and no one else can have access to it. And that's great from a data moat, corporate strategy perspective, but it's not so great for consumers who would just like a better experience on the internet. That data could actually be used for other purposes. And so data portability, as, for example, given by the law, and actually very soon given by law in the US, is going to unlock an incredible, our expectation is going to unlock an explosion of new consumer experiences enabled by consumers interfacing all of their data with new applications.
It's pretty fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
It really never is pretty fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
What do you anticipate? You've just said an explosion of, I imagine an explosion of, again, not to just dovetail back to the word, but hyper-personalization to an even nth degree. But what are you anticipating at Crosshatch might happen here in the industry?
Yeah, I honestly don't know. What I'm hopeful for is today, if you're a startup and you have an ambition to build a new consumer experience, you're excited by the possibilities, the flexibility that AI gives you, that you can build faster and be more ambitious because AI is at the very least, a really helpful crutch. But you don't have easy means to access, you have a cold start problem. You don't know anything about your future users. If there's a way to a chill way to invite your users to connect all relevant data and be able to wield that for your new experience, I don't see how we couldn't have an explosion. Because today, if a consumer wants to use her, a lot of signal lives in, for example, users' Google data. But today, if a user wants to get access to it, they have to wait for a Google PM to decide to ship that experience. And like that doesn't seem like that's happening. But what if there were a way for any third-party developer to go wield that and go build something as requested by users? That's exciting and has never happened.
Yeah. Pending a lot of innovation. Pending a lot of it.
Yes. I mean, I think the short of it is we follow, I mean, I don't know, you know, or whatever. Indeed, you know, we're students of, you know, the big thinkers in tech. I think about like, you know, the phrases, for example, that USV, Union Square Ventures, puts forth of, technologies or networks that unlock access to knowledge. Today, all of this knowledge is siloed all over the internet. But what if there were a way to pull it just in a very simple way, pull it all together and interface it with everything else? Using AI. Yeah. Very exciting.
It would be really quite incredible. I think matching the AI with this new law that's passing is just nuts.
It's nuts.
Big opportunity. Death of the cookie and fingerprinting. You're going to get excited. So what does that really mean?
Yeah, it's so funny. Like all of, I mean, I don't know if folks are, you know, care or have followed this, but ad tech is, it's certainly in the US ecosystem, is going crazy right now. The death of the cookie seems to be breaking advertising on the open internet, more or less. So a lot of people, indeed, cookies are super in the weeds. The bottom line is that cookies allowed various websites you would go to identify you. Fingerprinting would do the same. So I think a lot of us might imagine if you're going to a site, you haven't logged in, like you'd probably imagine the site doesn't know anything about you. Like, why would they? Like, you haven't told them anything. But the cookies and fingerprinting allowed was for these businesses and also in networks that they would work with to attempt to identify you based on identifying information in your browser as given by cookies or your fingerprints, given by your IP address, your screen size, your operating system, your user agent. And what's fascinating right now is the top are our interfaces to the internet, our browsers. So predominantly, Firefox has been leading on this. Mozilla's Firefox has been leading on this. But Safari and Google have deprecated third-party cookies. That is, websites means to identify new users who haven't logged in, it is will no longer be possible using third-party cookies after 2024. And interestingly, too, so many folks have said, okay, well, if we don't have cookies, at the very least, we can fingerprint users. We can still identify them. We won't have cookies, but we can still identify them through their IP address because IP address is approximately unique. And you know, maybe we'll like figure out some magical way to identify users. But what's crazy at this, but also consistent with the interests of Google and Safari, at least in their stated interest in privacy, both are making IP address invisible to applications and websites on the internet, meaning that fingerprinting or like identifying anonymous users or identifying users through implicit consent, they've arrived at your site. And therefore, you get to know who they are, is going to be gone. And the reason why you care about this, not just like I think consumers could say, I don't care, whatever, this doesn't impact me. But the reason why a business cares about this is ID, identification, is their means to perform personalization. Like a business's means to deliver experiences that are personalized to a given user. Is secured by identity. But the internet's means of performing identity is about to die. So what are we going to do?
Where's this shift really coming from? Where's it being driven by? consumers?
Yeah, it's very, well, it's very interesting. I think there are a lot of folks in ad tech and in particularly in New York who have hot takes about this. I think we could say generally, like, there is a thrust of privacy. You know, people are interested in privacy. I think we can agree the internet started to feel creepy. We feel spied on. A lot of people have been writing about this. Like, the internet's data practices have just felt a little creepy. So you could say that this is a good step in delivering, like, anonymity that we really, like, I think we sort of want on the internet. That we should be able to go to the internet. We should be able to consent to identifying ourselves if we want to, but, like, we shouldn't be tracked on the internet. You know, I think, you know, a lot of people would say that. And so just normatively people have declared that, and Apple and Google and Mozilla have been working hard to actually deliver that. At the same time, many folks note that, you know, for example, Eric Supert, who has amazing writing on media and ads on Twitter. He'll note that, yes, this abstract idea of privacy, like, you know, is interesting and is something that, you know, we could see a corporate, you know, pushing on. But he noted that for such a large effort, making these changes is really big. A corporate would only do it if it serves them. So,
okay,
there is, you know, it's normatively good, but also maybe self-serving as well.
Okay, interesting. There does feel like there's this really interesting shift. I agree. The internet can be this really interesting place at the moment. And it feels like, you know, what we're talking about here is, yes, there's this drive towards privacy, but where you step in and probably where the industry is playing in your favor as well is there's an opportunity for you to really create some really, really personalized experiences. And hence what's happening next month and the law that's being passed. There are some things here that can really work in your favor from a business perspective.
Yes, the changes in data portability are fascinating because they are written by the same people who've been pioneering privacy, and so it's sort of hard to grok what the, like, so yeah, data is more portable, but also we like want how do you square this?
Yeah, it feels like a bit contradictory.
Yes, it does seem contradictory. Our hope is to thread that needle, indeed.
So what does this mean for Crosshatch and this year before we wrap up? I almost feel like you're our internet correspondent and you've delivered some really good insights into some changes here. But Crosshatch 2024, what's the business outlook for you guys and what are you trying to achieve?
Yeah. So this year we're targeting on working with design partners for whom personalization can drive that mutual value for customers and businesses. The long time intuition is that when businesses deliver more personalization, there creates more value and opportunity to sell more. And when you think about it at internet scale, it can feel sort of icky even. But when you bring it down to a human level, this feels pretty intuitive. Like, you go to a coffee shop, the barista knows your name, he knows your order. You like going to this coffee shop because the barista knows your name and knows the order. That's why it's your favorite coffee shop. And so our belief is, well, this low scale experience that someone has an affinity for this coffee shop, actually via AI is going to be able to be scaled to the internet. And so our calling card, I guess, is for folks who are thinking about identity, who are beginning to implement identity solutions on their site, inviting users to log in. Our sort of call is, well, if you're going to invite users to log in, why not let them bring all of their data with them to allow you to deliver an experience that's 10x better than any personalization that you could ship before?
Awesome. I think people should definitely, for all our listeners, people should be following Crosshatch. You're making some real, real headway to some changes on the internet that mean a lot to every single person. We're all consumers of this, right? If you are US-based, listening, tuning into us, follow Soren, follow the team at Crosshatch. Soren, are you going to be hiring more folks into your team this year? And this is an open forum for you to be able to share with people what you're looking to hire for and what skills, because people tap in, they listen, they reach out.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, so this year we expect to grow the team, I think, in two dimensions. The first is principally data engineering. We're endeavoring to, we're ambitious, but to change the way that data flows on the internet. And that involves security and incredible low latency connections. So I expect that we'll be growing the team on the back end. Further, CrossEdge endeavors to make data sharing effortless, or even to say data sharing chill. And to do that, we need an incredible design to communicate to users like what exactly is being shared, and to perhaps even give users more control. And so for that reason, we'll be spending a little bit of time on design and UX. But those two areas I can as high level, but please feel free to reach out.
At a macro level, if you're a backend infra data engineer who really loves stuff around the internet and security, you should be reaching out. Flip side, if you're on the design side, you should be reaching out to some of the team. But above all, follow these guys, subscribe, like and share the podcast. Soren, I want to say a big thanks for tuning in all the way over in San Fran. You're Miami-based, but in San Fran at the moment at a conference. A huge thank you for coming to talk to us about some of the really cool stuff that you're building. And we'll stay in touch.
Ellie, appreciate the time. Great to chat.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Guys, thanks for watching this episode. Massively appreciate you listening and checking in with us. If you want to find out more about us and what we're doing, please check us out on social media. What we're trying to do at Engineers is build a community to drive knowledge sharing and experiences. On Twitter, we can be found at engineers.io. It's no underscore. We've also got a website, which is engineers.io. These links will all be posted in the description. Any feedback and comments are massively appreciated. We're always looking to improve on where we can. Thanks, guys.